38 shows later, and it boils down to this: St. Helens Grand Final winners 2019. And joining me here at League Express Towers this week to look back at an eventful Grand Final, we're joined by Mr. Aaron Bauer. Alex Davis is here, and Matthew Shaw is here. So, hello everybody, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. Downer World Cup Nines? What's the downer bit for?
It's a sponsor.
It's a sponsor, isn't it?
Good,
it's
okay.
Not, it's not an adjective.
I don't know. Anyway, Downers World Cup Nines preview coming your way shortly. We're also going to be joined by Lorraine Marsden for a look back at the Women's Grand Final. Steve Brady will be joining us too to talk about the prospects of a magique weekend. Bit of French there for you. That was from your own paper. Magique. That's what it says. And we'll
switch off now.
Absolutely despair.
Okay. And we'll be discussing the other latest news stories affecting the game. But before that, it's a big congratulations to St. Helens. Who wants to go first? You missed an opportunity, by the way, Aaron, in your piece. You said, sorry, kids. What you should have said is, sorry, our kid. That's what you should have said. Never mind. But St. Helens, very worthy winners.
Yeah. 100%. That was a great grand final, actually. I think the fear was when St. Helens went 12-0 up that it was going to become a bit of a massacre, a bit of a one-sided final. Salford deserved massive credit for fighting their way back into it, but in the end, I think we got the right result. Probably would have been a little bit, not a travesty, but it would have been unfair had St. Helens' dominance this season not been reflected in a piece of major silverware. So, yeah, congratulations to St. Helens. They've been the benchmark all year, but I know this has upset a lot of people, but I think Salford deserve a hell of a lot of credit in the equation as well for not only the way they got to the final, but the way they acquitted themselves in the final, and their supporters as well. They were fantastic.
Matthew, Justin Holbrook leaving us with two trophies. Not bad.
No, not at all. I agree. Well, look, I said in the build-up, there wasn't really a loser. The outcome, I don't think we could lose. Salford win, you get the great fairy tale, the ultimate story. St. Helens win, you can now, in years coming forward, you can discuss them as one of the great teams because they have won a grand final now, they've won one of the major trophies, and I think they will go down as that, this team. I think they will go down as one of the best teams Super League has ever seen. It would have been a travesty for Saints if they hadn't won, but just like we've seen so many times this year, too fast, everything they do, and eventually they just made Salford crack.
You wrote about Luke Thompson in the paper and his effects on the game, Alex. He had a good night.
Well, he did, didn't he? He was out there for 73 minutes until cramp forced him off. He'd have stayed on. He wasn't bothered, was he? To be honest, he epitomised exactly what Saints are all about. They won the game through the middle with just brilliant ruck play and domination through the middle, and that allows them their outside backs to do what they do. But it's not just about Thompson, it's about the entire Saints team, and that's what made that Saints team really good. No one really stood out hugely among them. Everyone played their part.
The key point of the whole game was the second tackle of the entire match when Lee Mossop dropped the ball. Chris Nenil carried it in, which he wouldn't normally do. Wouldn't do if he won a grand final. And that means Lee Mossop takes it from the wing, uncomfortable running style, drops the ball for the next 25 minutes. They were just pinned in their own half.
Well, that's it. Salford didn't get out of the half. No. And they did there brilliantly was to be as close as they were, Salford.
I mean, that was the thing at half-time in the bit of the stadium I was in. We were like, still in this game.
Salford gave themselves a chance, which is a huge kudos to them. Because
it looked like after half an hour, they couldn't get out of their own end. St. Helens had spurned a few chances, but when they got over for that second try, which was a lovely try from the scrum, you thought, well, this is it now. They're going to kick it up a gear. And to be fair, they probably did kick it up a gear. They were great for 18 minutes, St. Helens, but Salford hung with them and lived with them for the most part.
That start of that second half, 12-6, Salford looked like they could.
Well, the first try was big, wasn't it? Yeah. If Salford would have jagged the first try, it was game on. The thing for me was saying, it's the way. The biggest compliment you can pay them all year is that they're so balanced across their entire spine that if one of them has a poor night, you know, and I'm not sort of patronising or talking down the other people in that Salford spine, but if Hastings had a poor game this season, Salford would generally struggle, wouldn't they? But I didn't think Farge was great with ball in hand on Saturday night, but Coote stepped up on this occasion, for example. I thought Coote was very good. What I'm saying is Coote, Lomax, Farge, Robey together, they're all incredibly consistent for the most part, and that generally makes you a very good side and a very tough side to beat when you've got three or four players that you can rely on a weekly basis, and that's without even getting into the forwards, the likes of Morgan Knowles, who's been an unbelievable unsung hero for them this season. They, like Alex said, the outside backs, Makinson and Grace, do so much damage after the forwards have laid the foundation. So they're just a great all-round team. And I'm looking forward to seeing them playing the Roosters, actually, next year. That'll be a great matchup.
Coote was definitely the key playmaker. But it wasn't a game about playmakers, which is unusual for a grand final, to be honest. But it was all done in the middle.
Salford were in it at half-time. Yeah. Could anything have changed?
You try to trigger me to say something about referees.
No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not.
Alex, did you think he was?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not.
Look, right, let's...
Do you hear that, St. Helens fans? I never asked a question about the referee at all. No, I did not.
It was a leading question. Loaded question.
I've got loads of loaded questions, if you like.
I think, look, the way I would perceive it, if we're going to talk about it, there were some 50-50 calls in that game. And that's what they were. They were 50-50. And they went the way of St. Helens. That's fair.
Was that enough?
Right. If you go through them, one of the big talking points was the Adam Walker one, wasn't it? Where he was given a knock-on. We get to see it, super zoom, super slow-mo, and I'll be honest, I still don't know if he's dropped that ball or if it's been ripped out. So how the hell can you expect the referee to? My point that I'd like to make on referees, if we're going to make one, is the game is too hard for them to officiate now. There are too many dark arts in play.
And it's too fast.
And it's too fast. They are the two things. Too many dark arts, too many people trying to bend the rules, which happens in all sports, and it's too fast. It is not possible for the referees to get everything right on this occasion. I'm not even going to say Salford were hard done by. They were unfortunate on some calls.
That's just one of those things, on the wrong side.
Was there a headbutt in one of the tackles?
I don't think so.
We had an argument about this on Sunday.
You would not believe how long that debate went on.
The head's touch, but is that headbutt? He's about an inch away when he moves in, and it's not hard. It's not going to hurt him.
It did hurt him.
But it didn't, though, did it? Really? It didn't.
The head's touch,
but I don't think that's a headbutt, personally.
To be fair to Salford, they've not criticised the referee at all, have they?
I think he did a good job. I think Chris Kendall is a good referee, and he's come a long way in a short space of time. I've been refereed by Chris Kendall at university level.
Oh, check you out.
All right. Pick that name up off the floor.
Yeah.
And we always...
Does he remember you? That's the most important
thing.
Not. No, okay.
Whenever he turned up, I thought, oh yeah, he's a good referee, because at the time he was refereeing in the Championship and he was still coming down to referee in our game.
The one thing I'd say on the refereeing situation, and it's not to criticise Chris Kendall, far from it, because I thought he did a good job. Did the best ref in Super League do the final? I'm not sure he did. I think Robert Hicks has been the best ref in Super League this year, and...
But we all know why.
We will never know if that they avoided giving the final to Robert Hicks because of what happened after Wembley. It's possible, of course, it's possible. But I just thought, Robert Hicks had been the best ref all year.
Not
he deserved
not
the final.
Even a video
fact,
ref.
Yeah, the fact that he wasn't
in the mix at all.
At all suggests to me that yes, we know.
But they generally don't give. Correct me if I'm wrong. They generally don't give the same ref both finals, do they? Either.
Biggest question of the night, though, Matthew, and this comes back to a question I asked you a while ago. Shed 7, did you enjoy them?
Yeah. I enjoyed the York City Night shirt, to be honest. But that was typical. That's the sort of thing that York will have thought about that other clubs wouldn't. I mean, they got publicity at the grand final, good on them. But yeah.
I
will be honest. I think we've had this conversation on this podcast before and I was abused. I had not heard of Shed 7 before.
Tickets are available for their Leeds December show.
I'm going
show
to that gig. Yeah.
Did you hear of them before this?
Yeah, I've seen them. I've seen them live, yeah. Seen them in York, actually.
Me too.
In their hometown of York. Yeah.
We are very different. I'm on O2 priority today, trying to get tickets for Avril Lavigne. So that shows where we're at.
On that note.
Yeah.
That's anyway, the last podcast ever.
I don't know. I've got a lot to talk about. I don't think I can recover from that. Anyway.
What's wrong with Avril Lavigne?
Just to mention for Ian Watson and what he said, obviously this is, I think, a landmark moment for Salford. Where can they go to after this?
It's a great question that we probably don't know the answer to, because on the face of it, having looked in closer detail, I was a bit taken aback by his comments in the week, and people like Ian Blees as well, saying we've actually recruited what we think to be a really strong squad next year. And you think, oh, what? Hastings is going? Jones is going? But then you look at what they've done, and all right, the jury's out on Kevin Brown, who hasn't played in Super League for a year because of a torn Achilles. But Luke Yates is a good signing. Chris Atkins got the potential to be a good signing. I think Reece Williams could has shown this year that he can cope with Super League rugby. I think they've done some good business. The big question is whether they can fill that Hastings size hole in their spine, and that's going to be very tough. It's going to be very tough. Lollahee is going to have to step up more than he ever has done before. Is he a leading halfback? I'm not sure. So I certainly wouldn't have them down to be right back near the bottom within the space of a few months. However, I think another tilt at the grand final. Castleford's players in the aftermath of 2017 told some of the press off the record, this might be our best of a chance to get there. I have a feeling the same is applicable to Salford. I think that was probably their one time.
I mean, how much of this success this season is to do with Ian Watson rather than the players, and Ian Watson could literally do this with any team? Because let's be honest, what we were talking about back in the preview show wasn't Salford's going to be at Old Trafford.
And speaking to Greg Brown last week as well, the conditioner, it's very clear that they know what they're doing in terms of looking after the players. It's no fluke that they've only had one or two bad injuries this year. They know how to condition people, how to get people right for games, and they go through every player's history and medical records with a fine-tooth comb. So they're as prepared as they can be off the field, and that's spearheaded by Watson. It's genuinely just a case of are they going to be able to replace someone of Hastings' quality. They're losing the best player in the comp. It's as simple as that.
Do you reckon, Matthew, some of those players who are leaving, who agreed to leave a while ago, might be looking at it going, too hasty there?
It's interesting that, because I actually asked that question to Josh Jones.
Well, he's the one in it. He's the one who you think he's going all the way to Hull. No, nothing against Hull, but it's a long way to uproot your family and everything. Hastings is going 5 minutes down the road to a genuine club that are competing year in, year out. But Jones is the one, isn't he? Maybe Griffin as well.
I put the question to him, and I'm going to put it on Webby's answer, actually, after this. But let's just say this, there was a long pause to consider the answer to that question.
I bet.
I think one of the bigger questions that's not really been asked, everyone's saying, can Salford improve without Hastings, or can they stay at the level without Hastings Jones? I think there's also a question of the players leaving. Can they keep their performance levels up? Can Josh Jones play as well as he has done at Salford?
It'd be tougher for Jones and Hastings, I think. Yeah. Hastings should be all right.
Yeah, you'd think so. But I think that is a question on the Ian Watson front. You would have to say on paper, yes, they've recruited okay, but it's still weaker than this year, I think. Just about. But I don't think you can question Ian Watson's recruitment anymore after what he's done with some of the players he's brought in this year. I mean, Christ almighty.
Lussick, who's Lussick? Who's Joey Lussick?
Literally, we're playing for some Magpies. Yeah. Greg Burt literally wasn't wanted by Widnes, who were the whipping boys last year.
Gildas.
You know?
He knew.
There is an element of Moneyball about it.
It's all of them. Yeah. It's all of them, isn't it?
One thing that Salford will have to deal with next year is being a potential target for teams. They now know that Salford are decent, and I think that's one of the things that Castleford had to deal with in 2018, I think, was they were the team that to beat.
And some of their players couldn't deal with that very well, and like Matt alluded to, you know, Hastings, Jones and Griffin, as an example, are going to three clubs where the expectation levels are significantly higher. You are expected to be competing for trophies, and that brings with it a different mentality and a different type of pressure.
For Salford, obviously, there was a lot of fans there. I can't remember the exact figures that Salford are looking for those to be translated into.
They said 1,000, didn't they? They said if they could get 1,000 out of it.
It could be transformative this season, couldn't it?
Without a doubt. If they can convert them and get them in with the merchandise, everything that comes with that, they can start looking at spending somewhere nearer to cap. And that's the thing that everyone forgets. This isn't a salary cap top heavy squad. There's loads of unspent cap space. So if they can get to a point where they're bringing the revenue in to spend that, could do anything.
Alex, let's talk about St Helens then. Obviously, they've got their own transitions coming in for over the close season. Can they repeat this year, next year? And can they go even one better and win the treble? Are they capable?
Definitely. The team is pretty much staying together. I think, well, Holbrook's obviously a loss, but they're bringing in someone else and someone with new ideas, fresh ideas. And I think they'll be up there next year without a doubt.
They'll be up there.
Whether they can do the treble or not is a different question. Think, but yeah. they'll certainly be there or thereabouts.
When a new coach comes in a situation like this, I think they've got an unenviable task. Because even though Justin Holbrook's done a fantastic job, got the best out of players that weren't being seen the best of before. Christian Wolf might be a fantastic coach with fantastic ideas, but the players that are there might not necessarily suit his style of play. So
he's got to make it his own team. Yeah, at the moment it's Holbrook's team.
That's the issue. That's one issue that St Helens do have with Holbrook going. For me, the key in the Super League to success is stability. Holbrook ultimately has only done 2.5 years. And you can't blame him for that, you know, but he's built his own squad and it's very hard to start changing your squad. You know, you've got to do it in cycles and they're probably halfway through a cycle rather than at the end of a cycle. So Christian Wolf has a big job on his hands, certainly next year.
And obviously League Express is continuing over the winter. It'll be out every week with loads of transfers. News and
come on.
I know, sorry.
Would everyone do without us? No one I hope to write about.
That's very true. Or do podcasts about. But yes, what was I saying? Loads of transfer news and that kind of thing. So lots of squads are being built at this stage for next season. So it seems very, very early to be talking about who your dark horses are for next season.
Oh, my God. No, come on.
Really?
The season's not even over yet.
What do you mean by dark? I'll indulge you.
Yeah.
What do you mean by dark horses?
I mean,
like a Salford this year?
Yeah. Are Salford capable of doing it again? Or if they're not, who do you think is going to be...
Toronto Wolfpack.
They're dark horse?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They've never played in Super League.
No, I know, but...
If you look at that squad, it's not... At the moment, it's not a top squad, is it?
No, it's not. It's not a grand final winning squad.
But they'll improve it.
Are you
exactly? Yeah.
And this is the thing, isn't it? Over the next few months, that League Express is going to be filled with rumours and speculation.
They're
that
the ones
going to
that's
Toronto.
Going to revolve around.
They're
aren't
not
they,
going to sign many.
It's already started.
They've not lost many, and it's been well known they've been struggling with cap all year, so they're not going to sign many. They've signed Cunningham. Probably going to sign Singleton.
They're just going to supplement, aren't they?
Yeah, after that, they'll probably bring a prop in.
They do need some forwards, looking at the squad.
They'll bring a back rower in.
They need
Leon
a couple
Singleton
of
and Thingy. And maybe
they're all right in the backs, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all right.
They might bring a cover in, a cover utility back to replace.
But they could make the five.
I have an outrageous question to finish off our Super League chat for this season, and that is who's going to be in the grand final next year.
Oh, for God's sake.
Grand final next year is going to be Huddersfield against Wake. No, it's going to be St Helens against Warrington.
Oh, different.
I'm definitely saying Wigan, and it's hard not to see Saint. Wigan Saints.
I think it's Saints Wigan. That's
Wigan
what I'm going to go with.
Wigan Saints.
Well, that's Super League. Big thank you for joining us for these 39 shows to discuss Super League. It's been a long year, hasn't it?
Have we done 39 of these?
This is the 39th show, yeah. Let's talk about the women's grand final. That took place on Friday night, and lo and behold, Lorraine Marsden's prediction was correct. Leeds Rhinos won. And for more, let's hear from Lorraine now. Lorraine, a big thank you for joining us. Shock horror, not just your prediction being correct, but
it's the first.
Leeds have done it again. What do you think? How was the match?
Match was really good. I was speaking to people there and there was very much a sense that even though Leeds went down early on, you could just, as the game went on, you could sense that they were just building and building in confidence. That then seemed to make Castleford a little bit frustrated and push them into making plays that they probably wouldn't have done if they were still in full control. That caused them to make a few errors. They start getting a bit frustrated. Leeds built on that and built and even more confidence, so it got into a bit of a confidence cycle, really.
Two tries right in the last 10 minutes or so was pretty much the killer for them.
Yeah, midway through the half, the second try by Fran Goldthorpe, which may or may not have been grounded. If the video ref had been there, it would have certainly been an interesting decision. And then Elfrain really just confirmed everything for Leeds.
And Etok again.
Yes.
Yes, I mean,
she's
great signing.
I mean, that was her fifth game and I think a seventh try in that time. So
I mean, everyone at Leeds must be really excited for what this team and in particular what she's going to be bringing to the table next season.
Yeah, certainly this team, because she's 18. You've got Fran Goldthorpe, who scored two tries, who's only 16. Caitlin Beavers was looking really strong again at fullback, and she's just turned 18 as well. It was her 18th birthday on the day of the final. So a lot of the players in the squad are still teenagers, and if they can keep them together and keep developing them together as a unit, then, you know, it's looking really promising at Leeds.
And obviously it was on Sky, and, you know, we touched upon that last week, how important that's going to be for the future. Generally, this season's been, I'd say, a triumph, would you agree?
I would say so, yeah. It's certainly growing year on year, and I can only see next season. I know this one's only just finished, but talking about next season, you can only see it, you know, getting bigger and bigger again.
And with regards to the other finals which took place in Manchester on Saturday, congratulations to Warrington and to Keighley Albion,
yep.
Winners of the Championship and League One, respectively. What's your take on the whole season overall?
The whole season overall, is, you can see from the action in the Championship and League One just how close games are there, and the standard of games in those leagues as well, that there's real potential lower down as well. So the more people they can get playing, the more competitive all clubs can become. It can only be good for the game.
Yes, absolutely. And that will feed into the national team as well. And just a quick mention for the Nines, which is taking place this weekend. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the men's version later, but the women's are also in action. Four teams, PNG, New Zealand, Australia and England.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of players from Castleford and from Leeds and St Helens in that Leeds squad, in that England squad. Rather, how excited are you about this weekend? And
I'm excited to see how the tournament goes. It's a fairly new concept for pretty much everyone involved, certainly in the women's lineup. But we've seen in Super League this year that a lot of the players have played quite a quick, open, expansive game, which looks like it will suit the Nines format.
A lot of tries.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lorraine, a big thank you for joining us. Just your closing thoughts then, really. I mean, this season's been great. What are you expecting next year? I mean, Castleford are going to be wanting to bounce back. And yeah. St Helens are as well, in all fairness.
They are, yeah. And Wigan will want to bounce back as well, because they won't have enjoyed going in as reigning champions and ending the season with nothing. But again, the experience of another year playing at this level behind all the players, the experience of those that are going out for this Nines tournament and then the tour in Papua New Guinea, that will help develop them even more as well. So you can only see that the game is just going to grow and grow, and quite rightly.
Lorraine Marsden there, big congratulations to Leeds and all the winners of the grand finals last weekend. Alex? Thoughts?
Just can't do it, can they? No Castleford side can beat Leeds in a final. It's just one of them things, isn't it? Forever.
And they say the gap between men's and women's sports is massive. Castleford are just on brand, aren't they? all across the game.
It was so a weird game, though, because you watched it early on and you thought, Castleford got this.
Yeah, they were good.
And then it just never happened. I thought the difference was when the going got tough, one team played like a team, one team played like a team of individuals trying to win the game and do something for the team themselves.
I think, yeah, panic.
Panic.
Obviously.
They rushed, didn't they?
The other thing as well is that it's no secret that there's a lot, that Castleford team's very young, mm-hmm. but sometimes there's no substitute for experience, and Tech Cornhill is an example. She was tremendous.
They need to believe, Castleford, that they're the best team, because they probably are on paper. Over the entire season, they're the team.
Do you know what I don't get, right? Kelsey Gentles is clearly quality, isn't she? But she plays on the wing. She never gets the ball. Could she not move in field and play centre? Just one person further in?
Well, as we were discussing there, Downer World. What is Downer? What company is that?
I have no idea.
Downer World Cup Nines is taking place this weekend. Four women's teams, nations, taking to the field this weekend as well. And we'll cover that off shortly.
What we do on Downer's website. Something to do with trans. Wow, they do everything.
Wasn't it worth sponsoring the World Cup Nines? Because here we are discussing it.
Well, yeah. Downer designs, builds, and sustains assets, infrastructure, and facilities.
If we're having this talk, right, I'll be the one to say it, and I'm going to sound like an old dinosaur. Don't
don't get the point of it.
It's too much rugby league can kill you.
Alex, me and you will pick this tournament up.
I don't like the Nines.
Okay. Right. Let's talk about championship then. Yay. Right. Bradford Bulls latest.
It's interesting. We've just been talking about Salford, haven't we? And the thing, again, you know, like Matt says, no one's really... It's easily forgotten that they don't spend the cap. But it's also easily forgotten that they're a club who live within their means and don't overspend by a single penny, which is what they will do next year. If they get more fans, they will spend more money on players. If they don't, they won't spend any more. Throw that in direct contrast to what you see in Oddsall. The RFL can't childmind club owners. They can't tell them to make every decision and advise them on every decision. Essentially, these owners are responsible for their own actions. But the RFL picked these owners. So they are accountable on some level. I would also now like to see some clarification on what a fit and proper person test entails. Because, yet again, another club... They're not going to the wall, are they? Because they're going to be saved by Chris Brereton, it sounds like. Or Chris Brereton and his consortium. But I think... The time is coming now for this governing body to be wholly transparent about its actions regarding selecting fit and proper people. And you don't have to be a finance expert to see them recruiting a squad of 35 at the start of the year and realise this is going to end in tears. It's absolutely ludicrous and it's embarrassing for the city of Bradford.
There's so many other things as well. The biggest problem Bradford have now, and look, fair play to the guy, he's come out, he's spoke to the press, he's done some good interviews, he's been honest, he's not tried to sell a dream, which I think Bradford, people who have been in his position have tried to do a million and one times. He hasn't done that. However, he has to appreciate that, more importantly than anything, fan confidence and fan trust is at an all-time low, but it's non-existent. And the same goes for the wider rugby league community. So... they have to be squeaky clean in everything they do.
Tell us it's going to be, prove it's going to be different.
Yeah. And if that means that Bradford have to have a budget that's the lowest in the championship and they potentially get relegated, so be it. Because it has to change here. It cannot carry on like it is, where there's this idea that because of the Bradford Bulls, they've got to be big spenders.
Well,
and
the other thing is, you've got to get this notion, the game's got to get this notion out of its head now, that, you know, you see owners coming in, Bradford fans still think it. We're going to get back to Super League.
No, this notion
has got to disappear now, right? And I'm not just saying it because Matt sat across the table. Bradford are a Halifax now, right? 100%. They're a Sheffield. They're a mid-championship club. They've been out of Super League now for 5 years. They're not a Super League club anymore. They have no God-given right. They have less of a God-given right than most of the clubs to be in Super League, because they went to the wall 3 years ago and they're racked up to their eyeballs in debt yet again. So... the RFL, while we are criticising them, and rightly so, they're well within the rights. A lot of Bradford fans were decrying that there was some sort of conspiracy when they were placed in special measures. Now you can see why they were put in special measures.
I mean, I heard what you said there about, you know, they have to kind of accept where they are, they're a mid-table championship club. The blueprint for all of this is the York City Knights, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, of
because
course it is. They were going to the wall when John Flatman...
And it's not really, he's not really necessarily thrown money at it.
Well, he's not reinvented the wheel, has
he?
No,
he's put structures in place.
And that's...
just said, this is where we're going.
Probably the tentative hope that lies there for Bradford in the...
or any club.
Well, in the guy who's going to be running the club day-to-day... albeit with the help of another guy in Michael Carter, he's got experience of turning around a struggling business. Yep. Wakefield now are self-sufficient, sustainable, one of those. They are, or both, they are a stable club. And I think if you said to all Bradford fans, in 3 years' time, your balance sheet can read zero or a small profit and you'll be finishing on average between fourth and sixth in the championship... sign us up. I just think, most Bradford fans that are left now, and there aren't many, are just sick of being lied to. I think they just crave, and like, again, I'm not being horrible because Matt sat across from me. They're actually jealous of Halifax now. And you factor in where the two clubs were 15 years ago. They're envious of clubs like Batley and Halifax and Sheffield now because they're just stable and they get on with the business. And every year they look after the club. They don't run it in the rack and ruin. And then they go again. And sometimes they overachieve. Like Sheffield this year, look at what Sheffield did. They got to Wembley, they won a cup final. Sheffield, they were competing in the top half for a large part of the season. Halifax under Richard Marshall for 4 years were competing against Super League teams on a near annual basis. That's all people in Bradford want now. They just don't want to be lied to anymore. What will be interesting, nothing's been said one way or other on this, although Chris Burton had hinted about Odsell being some sort of spiritual home, which again is codswallop.
Is that there was a rumour about moving office back to Odsell?
Well, they haven't they? The ticket office and the admin office is back at Odsell. They were in a porter cabin, I think, on the outskirts of Odsell, weren't they, for a few weeks? But they're going back into Odsell. Now, Chris Burton had hinted in an interview this week that Odsell is Bradford Bulls' spiritual home or whatever. So it sounds like it's not completely off the table. Hopefully, the fact that there's a guy coming in with a track record of making clubs stable is the start of something a little bit happier for Bradford.
It's sad that, for me, now, the best case scenario for Bradford in 12 months' time is that they've stayed in the Championship and have a club to watch.
Yeah.
Because
just below a mid-table.
They've got 13 players signed on at the minute.
Not 12, because Webster's gone.
Oh, no, it was 14, but Webster's gone.
John Kerr's in the paper saying he's been infused, I think is the term he used.
I spoke to him on Trafford on Saturday, and he said the same. He said it was nice to know what he's going to be spending and working with someone who's got a proven track record. So if all you can say is, because John Key is satisfied, they're probably...
It's like we're saying about Ian Watson. If John Key stays at Bradford, he could make 13 academy players play rugby league.
That's what they need to do. I mean, the charter sells Stoughton and Milnes to raise cash. But this is the point I'm making. People will say, they can do more than stay up. No, I don't think they can. Because they will have 11 players signed up after those two leave. And they will go. Someone will take them because they're good young, talented lads. They then have 11 players signed up. There aren't players here, there and everywhere to pick up from. Most clubs are dual reg, so it's going to be hard for them to do that.
They need a dual reg partnership. It would have worked in their favour if Feather had gone up, wouldn't they? Because they could have probably gotten a better league.
What about this dual reg that Barrow are doing with the amateur game in Barrow? That's quite an intriguing...
I like it.
Anyway.
But Bradford could lose another two. They could literally be down to 9 players.
What they've got to do, like most other clubs outside of Super League now, they've got to get their house in order and their ducks in a row for 2021. They've got to be ready, because if they're not, they're in trouble.
Come to you for the next bit, Alex.
I'm going to say I'm listening now.
Ben doesn't want to talk about this.
End of rant.
Tim Sheens. A witness.
It's great, isn't it? I love it.
What an appointment.
He just wants to stay here and just go to clubs and have a challenge, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If Bradford fans are thinking, I've got a real downer on rugby league.
Not in that sense.
Yeah, the idea that, you know, witness 12 months ago were where they were, and now they've got a guy who's got a proven track record for getting clubs out of Championship.
And they've got a former Australian international coach.
It's bizarre. It's the bizarrest coaching appointment in a long time. I know a lot of people have asked, why would Tim Sheens be interested, / how are they affording, given, you know, they haven't particularly been blessed with money, but there are probably reasons to explain that will maybe come out over time.
Hasn't he said it's because of the exciting prospects that is their youth setup?
Well, he's been sponsored and they've made it very clear that he's been sponsored, so you would suggest that some sort of contribution to salary is coming from there.
The one thing that I hope doesn't happen at Widnes, and Widnes fans are among the most vocal, passionate, no doubt about that, but I just hope it doesn't give this false idea of what they can do next year, in the sense that, what I'm trying to say to you is, right, they've gone part-time, clever move, they're getting their house in order, so on and so forth, which what we've just discussed with York and Bradford, that's what needs to happen. But I still think, and I've thought this for a long time, and we can go back to the James Rule era, I think there's a massive, massive gulf at Widnes between expectation and reality.
Bradford, same, innit?
And I still think it's there.
I mean, he's on record saying it's because of the history of the club, obviously, but also the youth development stuff.
They've got a conveyor belt there, haven't they? And a good talent.
They're not going to buy.
Well, no, why would you? Why would you when you've got these young players coming through?
They've had their fingers burnt so recently as well, haven't they? And to be honest, they did what Bradford now need to do, which is a complete root and branch reform of their off-field team. They just need to
send a hurricane through the corridors at Oddsall and get people out and start again. But on Tim Sheens and Widnes, I don't think Phil Finney doesn't strike me as the kind of guy. You know, he's very passionate about Widnes. He's overseen the development of a lot of good young kids there. It strikes me that their philosophy and their ethos now is around building around these kids. They're going to lose some because they're going completely part-time. Sounds like Brad Walker might be going to Wakefield as an example. They've lost Keenan Brand, but who better to oversee the development of these young kids? And I'm sure the other thing as well is that we've said it before that there's better part-time players than some full-time players knocking around in the Championship. Mm. Going part-time knocks you into a whole new pool of players that if it's a toss-up between Widnes and another Championship club, you're going to want to go and work with Tim Sheens, aren't you? What a brilliant opportunity. So I think his name alone will attract some names and attract some, like I imagine John Keir's name has at Bradford. Mm. So I think it's exciting. I think for the first time in a couple of years, like Matt says, if Widnes are genuinely realistic about what they can do in 2020, I think there's cause to be genuinely excited there.
They can push for the playoffs.
Yeah. And they haven't alienated all their fans either. There's still a large core there.
With Toronto at the division, it feels like the playoffs is going to be a...
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Oh, absolutely. It's an open. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Toulouse are straight red hot favourites.
Yes, I mean, we'll cover Toulouse off in a second because we'll be in for Steve Brady. But just a mention for other head coach appointments, Matt Diskin's gone to Oldham.
God, that's a tough gig next year. Yeah.
Is that a tough gig?
Yeah, in the Championship.
Of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Mate, come on. I think there's a very clear two divisions within a division next year.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. But do you think Oldham can put themselves in a position where, I don't know, Dewsbury or Batley are, which is a steady as she goes?
They could strive to be around those teams.
That's the right phrase.
They need a permanent home, don't they, first thing first. They can't be moving around every couple of years.
We're still waiting to see where they're going to.
Oldham will have aspirations of staying in the division. Of course they will.
Finishing 12th.
And they will have an opportunity to do that if they play to their maximum potential.
Yeah. Just finishing 12th would be a great achievement. I think there are enough weak teams both coming up with them and in the Championship. That's not to
talk
anyone down that they've got a chance is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Obviously, we're saying all this without actually knowing what the structure is going to be the following year. I mean, there might not be relegation.
It'll be 2021, won't it?
Yeah, it's two more years before we know what's going on.
Just to stay that neck of the Greater Manchester area, Rochdale Hornets, Gareth Walker's pieces.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to say something. I have always been big on we look after heartland clubs, we look after traditional clubs. You've got to let these clubs build, prosper, thrive and do their own thing. But can anyone tell me what Rochdale Hornets do that contributes to the game?
Now, if you go in the Rochdale area...
Rochdale Hornets.
Yes, I'm saying if you go in the Rochdale area, you've got Mayfield, Saddleworth Rangers. Specifically said
Rochdale Hornets.
Yeah, I know you did.
Mayfield sometimes get more watching than Hornets.
This is what I'm about to say. They've got reserve.
Rochdale Hornets take how much central funding?
Well, Matt's right that the game needs to look after heartland clubs, but clubs also need to be able to look after themselves. And if they can't do that, you can't babysit rugby league clubs.
What I was trying to get at is clearly Rochdale as a borough is a heartland.
There's something
area,
there, yeah, yeah,
there's
yeah.
There's a lot
yeah.
of players being developed, and
ben,
you know,
I aren't questioning that.
Matty Ashton, Ben, obviously.
I'm not questioning
Does the sport need to, or the governing body need to look at Rochdale Hornets and have a discussion with them about the future and put a plan in place and help them.
I think the RFL needs to be accepting of the fact that we're probably going to get a drop-off in money in 2 years' time. And the game, I'm consistent on this, and I appreciate it'll upset people, but rugby league cannot support this amount of professional teams. Some are going to have to go in 2 years' time.
They're not really professional, though, are they?
It's semi-professional. But they're taking money from the professional pot. In 2 years' time, unless Ralph Rimmer pulls a rabbit out of the hat and gets a mega TV deal for Championship and League One, what are we on? 25 clubs outside of Super League, is it? 14 and 11? Yeah. There ain't enough money in the pot for 25 teams, because those Super League teams have already made it abundantly clear that if the money goes down, it's those clubs that are going to suffer. They're not Super League out losing
it. I'm going to counter that. It can, but the clubs have to do more for the game. Because at the minute, there are too many clubs that don't do enough. Yeah. And they've brought the KPIs in, and they've brought in how it's not just all on your league position. You've got to box tick, basically, to get your full allocation of funding. The correct way to go, But if clubs, for me, if clubs aren't ticking those boxes consistently, just get rid of them altogether.
I think we are heading to do something for...
I'm sorry, I know that's brutal.
I think Reading for 214 is long term. I think 28 teams is probably about where we are. And do you know what? If you chucked London and Toulouse into Super League, you still have a bloody vibrant championship with some great teams in there. You know, clubs rich on history, clubs with potential, clubs with ambition.
I mean, we go back to what League One's
that's
for,
not including Ottawa coming in and stuff like that, and New York.
You can't have a club like Coventry. I think everyone can accept that Coventry and West Wales Raiders are slow burners and are going to take years to get to anywhere near the potential they need to get. Yeah. You can't put them in championships, so you do need a League One.
For me, the question isn't over your likes of Coventry Bears. So trying to grow the game and they're building the player pool up in that area. So it's
not my question was about the competition and Coventry Bears find themselves.
Yeah, I'm not sure that 214 is the answer. I think 14 team Super League's the answer. I like 214s. After that, I think you need a much smaller League One.
But then if you put it in and if you do it and say, right, it's a developmental league or whatever, within 2 or 3 years, you're going to get some teams who have struggled at bottom of championship playing in your developmental league.
Yeah.
And you're going to get some teams coming out of your developmental league that aren't ready to play in championship. I think we're going down a route where we go to 214s.
But don't you?
And
don't,
if someone offers merit, yeah. If I don't know, if Bristol come to the table and say, right, here's a 5-year plan, here's what we're going to do junior level, here's where we're going to play, here's how much funding we think we need, and they fit the KPIs and the criteria, then they come in, and championship goes to 15. I think you're going to have to strip it back a bit. I think you're going to have to get to a certain number of ideal teams, and then the rest of the teams are going to have to go away, and if they prove they can offer merit and long-term growth, then they come in.
This is a thing, and look, there are clubs that are stable. The key phrase here, and it's what's been drummed by the RFL, return on investment. And if clubs aren't returning on investment, and it's harder for them not to be able to do that, but because quite simply, if they don't do what they need to do, they don't get the money they should get. But if clubs aren't being able to do that, long term under this structure, we have to have a very serious look about whether they belong in the professional game.
Of course, you could just say, right, here's League One, find your own way in the world. You don't have to necessarily have funding, and if it is sink or swim, you don't have to kick people out. This is the thing, and what I was trying to hint at before with the York City Knights. No one knows which club is going to be the next York City Knights, but the chances are they are going to be in League One.
There's right a pathway now. And there's proof. Whitehaven have shown it this year, haven't they? They stripped it back. They went with local players out of the amateur game, and they've shown that there's... And I think Workington are going to do something similar next year, aren't they?
Yeah.
So there is a pathway, and there's proof you can do it. But
Barrow have done it as well, even though they got relegated.
There are a handful of clubs who are just doing the same thing over and over again, and you're just going to get the same results over and over again. So if those clubs don't change, like Matt says, what are we getting for our money? This money, it's a lot of money we're giving away here, and the sport needs every penny it can get.
Well,
good chat.
Like we said, Gareth Walker's piece in League Express, very, very good on Rochdale Hornets. Obviously, he's got a lot of love for that club. Just to stick with the Championship, and something interesting, you all said that Toulouse Olympic hot favourites for next year.
Toulouse Olympic. Toulouse Olympic.
We started with all this.
Toulouse Olympic. An hour ago, you're going magique. Okay. Magique.
Je ne sais quoi.
What was it? I learned my French from that show. I can't remember the name of the show.
Next year.
Tots TV. That's it. But anyway, go on, carry on.
I don't think there's a red hot favourite.
Toulouse and London are better than the rest.
Yeah, those are the two.
Lea recruiting all right, though.
Yeah, they are, to be fair. Feather, a bit of an unknown with a new coach, aren't they? Feather recruiting really well, actually.
Feather unknown for a few reasons. New coach, reserve grade, how is that going to affect the players that they get from Leeds? They're not going to get Ashton Golding, obviously.
Yeah, they might not get McClelland as much.
So there are a few questions over them.
Mm. I had Toulouse at London. And
then you've got... Then after that, you're looking at York... Halifax have recruited all right.
Sheffield,
York have recruited all right. Sheffield's unknown at the moment. They haven't announced one signing yet. Mm. Until they announce, you can't say, oh, they'll be.
Based on the London experience that we just had this season, do you think that super? Because we all know Robert Elston doesn't like loop fixtures, and I don't think anyone likes loop fixtures.
No.
Do we think that there's a chance they could go with 14 for the next season after this.
For 2021?
Yes.
No, I think it's after the TV deal, isn't it? I think we are where we are now.
Does the TV deal not look a lot better if it's got Catalans, London and Toulouse in it?
Yeah,
and Toronto.
It does. But I'm also a big believer in not just putting clubs in because they're from a big city overseas. I think you've got to earn a right to be in there. Like Toronto, people are still criticising Toronto to this day, and I'll hold my hands up.
Not on this show, Aaron.
Well, I'll hold my hands up. At the start, I was very sceptical. But do you know what? They put them in League One, and they've worked their way up to Super League. That's the game. That's the system. So good luck to them.
And they've got on with it. They're not moaned about that. They've done it.
Anyway. Lots of people obviously giving their views around the Magic Weekend, going back to Newcastle. But what about the Magic Weekend that's been... there was a story by Steve Brady in the paper this week about Toulouse having a bit of a doubleheader with the Catalan Dragons in their brand new stadium. And for more on this, on Wednesday afternoon, I caught up with Steve Brady to hear more about it.
Well, it's come from Bernard Gouache, the president of Catalan Dragons, who's always been a big fan of taking games on the road. He's, in the past, obviously, we all know about the big game in Barcelona in the past season. But prior to that, they played Warrington in Barcelona. They've also played at the Stade Ernest Wallon in Toulouse in 2013 against Hull KR. The difference this time is that I think there's real momentum behind Toulouse Olympique. And then their ambitions to get to Super League. They've signed a three-year deal with the Stade Ernest Wallon to play at this 19,000-seater superb stadium right on the banks of the Garonne, just on the outskirts of the city. Superb. And Bernard Gouache has seen an opportunity there, I think, to get together with Toulouse and help to promote Rugby League in France, which would be a double-header game, a champion fixture alongside a Super League fixture, a Catalan's home game, at the new home of Toulouse Olympique. I think it's a great idea. It's caught the attention of lots of people over here. I think the attendance will be tested. As I say, Catalans have been there before. They got 14,000 on in 2013. I think with a doubleheader, the chances are we could maybe even fill the stadium. I mean, it sounds great to me. I mean, just imagine, we talk about the future of Rugby League. If, say, Toulouse were playing London and Catalan were playing Toronto, four big cities all over the world, that would get the flat cappers going, wouldn't it?
It really would. I mean, this is what we're talking about here. I mean, it's such a progressive idea, isn't it? You'd think Bernard would be going, oh, no, we want to be the big dogs here in France. But really, it's an acceptance, isn't it, that both clubs would do really well if they were in the same division.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, actually. At this moment in time, there's a real empathy between the clubs. They can both see that they're helping each other for the game to grow in rugby in France. It's good for them both, but I know for a fact, knowing the two Bernards, Bernard Sarrazin is the president of Toulouse and Bernard Gouache, we all know the fiery Latin nature of this guy. I think once they got into Super League, if indeed they did, then the gloves would come off and they'd become rivals instead of friends. In the correct kind of manner, sporting rivals would then create possibly a derby in the game, which could only be good for rugby league over here.
For that particular fixture to happen, Toulouse have to do well in the championship next season. Obviously, Toronto are out the way now, and safe to say, I think I'm safe to say this: Toulouse are going into next season as favourites in championship. I'd suggest, given the retention that's going on at the moment as well with the existing squad.
Yeah, they've done well to retain most of the players, and they've also added at the moment Harrison Hansen, a very experienced former Wigan, Salford and Lee player. I think that's a great signing. I think Harrison could put a bit more stability into the side. They've got flair and flamboyance, and the coach Sylvain Houlez has really put some pioneering new coaching techniques into that side, and some of the displays we've seen this year at the final season at Blagnac Stadium, they've been fantastic. You know, epitomising French rugby league, the Gaelic flair that we all want to see, but unfortunately maybe it wasn't enough against the strength of teams like Toronto. And when Featherstone came for that final game, I think maybe Toulouse were a little bit blown out by the season. They'd lost the scrum half, Stanislas Robin. And then during the game, the influential hooker went off Marion. So I think it was just a step too far. And having spoken to the chief exec at Toulouse, I'm not sure they were quite ready for Super League at this stage. I think they would have preferred to have a year in at the Ernest Wallon to get settled in there. And I think probably the end of next year would be more within the target and the budget and the plans.
I was going to ask you about next season and you know whether they could make that leap up. Clearly, the stadium is it's a bit of a triumph, isn't it, really, for what the possibilities are now for Toulouse in this stadium, because like you say, it's a fantastic facility and really would add to the flavour of Super League.
It's a beautiful ground. I mean, the acoustics are fantastic, the facilities around it are tremendous. You're just a short hop from the city centre. The Stade Anastasia-Lez at Blagnac, a little village with a couple of nice pubs and bars, was okay, but was always very limited, and it wouldn't be up to Super League standards anyway. So I think the future while on there is enormous, and I think it shows that there is maybe a thawing of the relations between league and union over here. It is the current home, the Ennis Wallon, of the French Rugby Union champions Toulouse, who are massively, they've got so much funding, they're the biggest team in France, and I don't think we see rugby league as a threat. So I don't think there's that animosity between the codes anymore. The stadium is owned by the local authority anyway. It's not owned by the Rugby Union Club. So just commercially makes sense. But I just hope that the people of Toulouse get on board. If they could start getting 10,000, 15,000 crowds in the first season in Super League, should they make it, it would be fantastic. Can they do it? I don't know. Tough next year in the Championship. Your Widnes will be up there. Your Halifax's, York even. Featherstone, it won't be easy.
No.
But I think they've got the resources. They've got some significant backing from local businessmen. I think there are 60 businessmen who put money into Toulouse Olympique. And they've got the resources, they've got the ambition, they've got a fantastic coach who I genuinely believe is inspirational and pioneering. And he'll go a long way. I think he's the youngest coach in the game at the moment. But he's Serban, who his techniques are incredible. And they're creating some of the best looking tries we've seen all season. So they've got the coaching side of it and the money side of it and a good ground. And should they make it to Super League, I think the sky's the limit for them.
Yes, absolutely. And just before you go as well, Steve, just a quick mention for the World Cup Nines as well, because France have a squad in this weekend's tournament. It's a healthy squad of a mix of the domestic competition from Toulouse Olympique, but also a heavy contingent of Catalan Dragons players as well. What's the expectation for this weekend's tournament from a French perspective?
I think it was inevitable that it was going to be Catalan heavy and quite a few from Toulouse, with them being the leading clubs over here. Not all the stars of Catalan Dragons have been available through injuries, but in the captain there, Jason Battieri, captain of the nine side, they've got a really combative, inspirational, quite a fiery player who's got pace and power. I think genuinely they can shock a few. I mean, I can't wait for the nines this weekend. What a treat at the end of the season to see such a flamboyant sunshine style game played down there in Australia. I think it might suit France. I think the conditions could suit them. Who knows, with a French team, as you know, with Catalan Dragons, they can win 1 week by 50 points and lose the next week by 60. So it's difficult to forecast. I will do a sit down on the Friday morning, Saturday morning. There's two sessions of it. Enjoy a cool drink and just let the French play with the usual style. I think the Catalans will stabilise the side. Toulouse might put a bit of flair into it. Who knows, Ben, do you?
No, I don't know either, but I think it's safe to say that I know a few people on this side of the channel are a bit, you know, rugby leagued out kind of thing with regards to this tournament, but for France, they don't get that many opportunities to get together on an international basis, so they must be really up for this one.
Oh yeah, well, they're excited because obviously they want to build up for the World Cup too and show people worldwide that they're serious about rugby league over here. And I know they are. I mean, the amateur game over here and then the Elite 2. Elite One seems to be booming ever since Catalan Dragons won the Cup. It's put a real fire under rugby league over here. And if Toulouse can do what we've talked about before and make it to the top flight, genuinely, there's real potential for a massive growth over here.
Steve Brady there from League Express talking to us about Toulouse Olympique, Catalan Dragons and the Downer World Cup Nines, everybody. This is keeping you busy this weekend. This tournament down in Australia.
I've not agreed to do anything.
Don't be expecting to see out in the Guardian. That's all I'll say.
Now, it's nice, isn't it, that we've got this tournament here where we're inviting along 12 countries to participate from both genders and...
Ben, shut up. No one wants it. We want to get on with the test series.
It does seem a little bit...
we're all rugby leagued out, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
31st of January, the first game I were at this... Well, first league game, 31st of January. The Knights have got as long as they can and they're coming back in.
They're good squads, though.
But what...
Who's standout player in the American squad?
The American squad?
Yeah.
Probably someone from...
Brilliant.
Good. Eddie Pettibon would be an easy answer.
Look, right.
Or Corey Makerlin.
Is this our preview?
Yeah, of course it is. We're honest.
But if you look,
are we trying to do nines, like long term, permanent? If we are, then great.
Are we going into club nines?
I thought we were. I thought that was the whole point.
Well, then they abandoned the nines, didn't they, the NRL? Yeah,
they did.
Nines at the start of the year, and it was great. But they've ditched it. They've ditched it for a reason. What time do England's games kick off?
The first one is ten past nine on Friday.
That's all right. I might be up for that.
I might watch that, to be fair.
Against Wales?
Against Wales.
I'll probably watch it. I'm just not...
Then you've got Tonga against
Cook Island. Is it on Sky?
The good thing about the nines is that, to be honest, it does even the playing field out a bit. One of the bad things I think about the nines is I don't think England will do that well.
I was going to say, I mean, they're in a... It's an interesting group that they're in.
The problem is that Australia, New Zealand, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa have all got experience of playing nines, whereas England don't really. And
they've got some good players who could suit nines. Yeah. Like, Jake Connor will really suit nines.
But then you've got players like in Australia, Caelan Ponga. He's going to be insane. He'll be, and then Sean Johnson in New Zealand.
Well, Group A is Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea and USA with the top two going up.
They're the top two.
Then in Pool B, it's England, France, Lebanon, Wales with only the top team going up. And that's that. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And
so it's like a super group, Group A?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm fed up with this favouritism.
And then in Pool C, which is a weird group, isn't it, really? Cook Islands, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga.
It's like a local dart group, isn't it, really?
That'll be the best group, that one. See,
you're such a hipster. Such a hipster. The Cook Islands, Fiji, Tonga as well.
Fiji, we all know what they're like at rugby sevens. This is as close as we get.
Wow, what are they like?
Oh, very good.
All right, okay.
Very good.
But this is nines, two extra players. Ooh.
They've got some quality players in there. Obviously, Nikama from St. Helens, and then Mike Seva, the top NRL try scorer.
If you are getting up or staying up to watch England v Lebanon at 2:20 a.m. well on Saturday morning, and England v France at 5:25, you have my respect.
You're like,
you more excited about England Knights against Jamaica this weekend?
Yeah. No. Do you know what? I think I would be.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing how the Jamaican and West Indian communities in and around Leeds and West Yorkshire take that game up.
Yes.
Because that'll tell you whether there's a big appetite for it. They've got that game on merit. They've been a revelation of Jamaica. They qualified last year. They were fantastic. They've got a lot of big players signing up and nailing their colours to the mast. And potentially, not turning down England, but overlooking England to go and play for Jamaica in the process. So I think it'd be a great test for England's kids as well. So yeah, I think I am looking forward to that game more.
I'm more interested what happens off the pitch than on it.
Yeah.
Look at the Jamaica squad. Yeah, there's some Super League stages in there. England are probably going to wipe the floor with them. But as Aaron says, it's, you know, there is a big Caribbean community.
I tell you,
in West Yorkshire.
John Dutton will be watching, because if there's a big turnout, you can get some big games scheduled for Jamaica in the World Cup, and you can get some real media interest going off the back of it, because you ain't seen anything like this.
I think we should draw a line on the show, unless anyone else has got anything to add.
I feel like we've been a little bit scathing and negative this week. I'm not a fan of that.
Oh, I don't know. We were pretty good on the grand final.
Season's out where we've kept it bottled up for long enough. What else are you going to talk about in off season?
Go on, Ben. What were you going to ask?
I was going to say, obviously, you know, there's
a great day for Manchester last week.
Well, for Salford, mate, it's own city, as you more than aware. right, well, I think that'll do for the Total Rugby League show for this week. Apart from the nines in next week's League Express, anything else coming up in your worlds this week?
Oh, my God.
Morning about Bradford.
Rugby League World magazine.
Of course. What's happening?
Everything.
We've got deadlines.
Well, that's it. All my stuff's in, almost. Matt hasn't even started.
That's true.
That doesn't sound like Matt.
Matthew Shaw, TotalRL.com editor. A big thank you for joining us.
I tell you what we've got coming up this weekend on any other business.
Oh, are we still doing it?
On Sunday, Rugby League World editor Alex Davis is running the Yorkshire Marathon.
Marathon? Where's that held?
In Yorkshire.
It's in York.
In York?
Yeah. Well, it starts in York, works its way out towards the east.
Which you were telling me it's a relatively flat.
It's very flat. And I'm doing the...
See, I do remember these chats. Yeah.
I'm doing the baby equivalent, which is the Yorkshire 10-miler on the same course. I can't run 26 miles.
If we're having this sort of any other business, I've got two table tennis matches.
There you go.
If I'm going to Oldham.
Oh, you going to Oldham?
Yeah, I played Oldham League.
Well, thank you. It's now officially the longest recording we've ever done of the show, so big well done right at the end. Matthew Shaw, big thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Alex Davis, always a pleasure. Aaron,
thanks, Manish.
Enjoy your 10-mile run.
I will.
And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.